Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, Jim Bird here from Killer Bees Barbecue out of Evans, Georgia. Of course, everybody knows I'm a cowboy and I ride a steel horse. So, anywho, we'll just skip the song, go right into the show tonight. We've got an action-packed show with Mike Richter, who's already on the line. From Chick Farm Bovine, just took Grand Champion down to Pensacola, Florida. And we'll have Big Jim Stencil from Bare Knuckles Barbecue, took the Reserve Grand down there, so we got both of them on the show tonight. We've also got Russ Cornett from Qology, Jack Labor from Mike's Catering coming on a little bit later to talk about the Carolina Pitmaster School they got going on this weekend in, Somerville, South Carolina? And they do whole hog, they do the whole nine yards. Every category you can think of, they'll cover down there in that class. Also, towards the end of the show, we have one of my sponsors, Scott Smith from Cuban Stewing and Brewing. Hopefully, Tim Thomas can call in too. We'll talk about his school coming up this weekend also. And his smokers, a new line of smokers he's got coming out that we've been test driving for the past few weeks. And also I'd like to put in a shout-out for Red Bagby and Dan Hicks and Swamp Boys and Three Eyes Barbecue doing a really big school down in Florida this weekend. And any of these schools, people, man, they're going to up your game big time. So if you haven't taken a class, you probably figure out some time to make it. And get in one of these classes because they're really set that learning curve in hell by tenth. And you save a lot of money and you come out of these classes winning. I do want to thank my sponsors tonight, Royal Oak Charcoal, Southern Q Smokers, Phoenix Printing, Fireside Outdoor Kitchens and Grills. I also like to thank WikiQ, Jeff Campbell, for helping us out. And I don't know who else. Oh, and my biggest fan of all, David Buska from Butcher Barbecue. Glad to have all these guys on board. I also want to tell everybody to give a shout-out to Chris Johnson from Meat Rake. If you haven't tried these things are phenomenal for pulling pork. They're tough, durable, they clean up easy, throw them in the dishwasher. These are some really good stuff. We do a lot of pork for the sandwich shop, and they make my life a whole lot easier. So, without further ado, we will have the Mike Richter from Chick Swine Bovine, all the way from Maryland. How you doing tonight, Mike?
I'm doing well, Jim. Doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing well. I hadn't seen you since Shelby, so kind of itching to get back down the trail. My first one ain't till April, so my first KCBS. So how's the weather down there in Florida?
It's cold. I mean, it's not as cold as home, but it's. We had the wind chill got down to 29 there in Pensacola about 5:30 in the morning.
How did that jambo do?
It had no problem. It purred right along, and it I posted a picture. I just got it completely overhauled. You know, it was made in 2007, and a lot of miles, I don't know, 125,000 plus on that thing. And one of my new sponsors, Quigley Motor Companies up in Pennsylvania, they took it completely apart, sandblasted the actual frame, cut out some metal, replaced it, ran it down, sandblasted the frame, painted the frame, and then put me a new quarter-inch aluminum deck on it so I don't have to worry about rust. Of course, painted the smokers and, you know, They did it upright. I'm ready to roll. It should last another 10 years like it is right now.
It was nothing like having an insulated smoker. And the sale level not on the market, but, you know, Jambos are very famous for, you know, Johnny Trigg and Rod Gray and Tuffy and all those heavy hitters right there, they all cook on Jambos. And I know you have for a past, you've been cooking on it for a while. And so when do you get your logos put back on there?
I'm debating on whether or not to go ahead and get it done while I'm down here south. I've got a buddy, Mike Favis, Slam Dunk Pro Productions, that's the president of the Mid-Atlantic Barbecue Association. He was out of town, and we had some weather issues trying to get everything done. It took him 2.5 weeks to really get the pit straightened out. You know, I had let it go too long to get the work done, so it made everything a lot worse. So it took them a little longer than what they anticipated and what I anticipated, and Mike had to leave town. So if I don't get it done before I go back home, I'll get it done as soon as I get back. I'm just worried about it. I don't want to get any chips on it, you know, from the road and all this other. You know, it's the vinyl wrapping that he puts on there is a motocross wrapping, and it's really tough stuff. The rocks might leave a little dig in the plastic, but they don't take the paint and they don't dent the metal. So
yeah, they've got some really good vinyl out now. Certain thicknesses of it and everything, which really hold up to the weather and all the elements of road work and all that stuff. So, so is this your first competition this year?
No, I went down and I got a top 10 brisket call, but otherwise Lakeland didn't like my food this year. So I went down there in January. I went in the pickup truck and burned out another hub and wheel bearings on the trip back. I went through three hubs and three wheel bearings in, 4 months. So it needs a good spindle shot, and, you know, it's bad when you're carrying an extra hub with you because you're worried about things like that. So I don't have to worry about that anymore.
Well, that's good. Yeah, little things like that. Well, I mean, that's not really little, but things like that can really take your mind off competition in a hurry. And you always get that feeling back in mind, am I going to make it there? And then when you make it there, geez, please just let me get home.
Yeah, well, if you remember on my way down to Shelby, I spent 6 or 7 hours waiting on a roadside guy to bring me a hub.
Yep.
So I could grind off the race and, you know, get all the bearings on. And for everybody that tows a cooker or any trailer, man, make sure you're packing your bearings and everything like you're supposed to. If you're doing real miles, at least a couple times a year. And I mean, those have been packed every year, and it's treated well. It's just, I just think the age, and I might drive a little too fast sometimes going down the road. And, you know,
nah.
Yeah, 20 to 30,000 miles a year. It's hard on things going. You know, these roads, you know, are in need of repair a lot of parts of the country. So
yeah,
bouncing and all that, it takes a wear and tear on things, and the salt, and you know, you drive back from Lakeland and it's snowing, and it all adds up for sure.
Yeah, you've been bouncing around a good bit around the, well, at least this side of the country, anyway, the last few years that I've seen. And how did it feel to get your first grant out of the way this year?
Fantastic. And it's the kind that surprises you, which makes it even better. Because, you know, Jim had three calls, and Jack's New South, also, I don't know what name they were competing under. They had three calls, and we only had two. They were good calls. They were good calls, and I thought the other meets were decent. But they were calling the top 10, and they hadn't called me. And Barry Johnson from Swig and Pig, when they got to reserve, he looked over and he goes, "You're in this race." And I said, "And I don't see how." And they'd already called Mike with Jack's Old South. And then they called Jim for reserve. I thought for sure it was Jim's contest. And, you know, being the nice guy that he is, you know, he comes over and congratulates me on his way up, which is like the kiss of death. And I'm like,
yeah, you know that? Don't you hate that?
Kelly Wirtz is there, you know, another Cambo cook who had won Pensacola the two previous years. and, you know, they're all come. I'm like, oh, man, I just hung my head. I didn't want anybody else to say anything to me. And I had some issues getting in there with the coach, of course, but I think it'll be finalized during the next week or two and have that all straightened out. He said, this guy lived in here, and come on up here, chick swine up a vine. And as Phil would say, I was happy, happy, happy.
The duck man coming, the barbecue man coming, I guess, now. So, yeah, those are always really nice. I mean, don't get me wrong, any grand or reserve grand is really nice. But, like you said, the ones that surprise you just make it that much more special. You know, because you know, everybody's calculating in their mind who's got what, who's got this. And then it comes up, then, like us at Banjo BBQ this past year, we got two calls. And they were calling down the line, and they got the fifth place. And they got fourth. They called Tuffy. He had one call. I'm like, Then they got third place, which is Roger Marshall, picking Porkers. And they had three calls. And I looked at Jan. I'm like, we didn't even make the top 10. And she looked at me, she said, you don't know, you could have got 11th in both of them. I said, oh, this crowd? Yeah, right. And they called us for reserves and threw them in the grill for a grand. And we missed grand by half a point. And sure enough, I was actually tied for 10th and got 11th on the brisket. So,
it just shocks you. It makes you so happy. I was in Kettering, Ohio, and I had my brother-in-law cooking with me. And we had one call, and I leaned over and I said, I'm sorry, we didn't even make top 10. And they called us for GC, but we were like 11th in the other three. And same thing happened in Nelsonville, Ohio, when my mother was there. You know, I was wanting to have a top 10 finish. You know, my mom was there with me. It was the first time she was at a contest, and we did get one call, so I got to take her to the stage for that. And then they called us for that. That's one of my most memorable competitions, being able to take her to the stage. So.
Yeah, that's really good. Like I said, you get some special friends or whatever. You know, I've got a roommate of mine. He was in Afghanistan for a while and everything, and I get to see him in a couple weeks to cook up in Columbia, and hopefully we can make it up to the stage. I'd like for him to come up there with us. And, you know, he'd been serving his country the last few years, so. But it's really good that, you know, something like that happens. Like I said, it's just that much special when you don't really expect it. And I've seen Bubba just get all giddy up there at the regionals up there in Nashville because, you know, everybody had, you know, I mean, we had two calls and a lot of people from one call was getting the top 10 calls there. And Scott from QSN and Burns Center said, man, you're in the top five tonight. But yeah, you are. You got two good calls. I'm like, I just don't look at it that way. And Bubba had one call before you know it, he won the grand. And there was somebody with two first place and an eighth place. And they finished behind me. And they bombed and ribs. They were laughing ribs. But Bubba snuck up and won that thing. And he was over to wait and get his sheets to see how bad he did. And I mean, he just looked, you talk about a total shock. I really wish I had a camera on him. Because he had his hand over his mouth like, oh, my God, I won. You know, like Miss America does.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was priceless. I'm not kidding. That's exactly what he did. He'll tell you he did. He said it was priceless. So,
one of your sponsors, Jeff Campbell. Well, we were sitting together. He's a friend. We've competed at Lakeland together, you know, next to each other for several years now. And he and I were up waiting in line for him to call reserve and grand so we could get our sheets. And they called him for reserve, and he was like, "What?"
Yeah, he got reserved at this one down here in Augusta. He didn't even get a. I think he got a. I didn't think he got a call. They were just calling out top three, and he didn't get a call at the one in Augusta. And he got reserved grand. I took grand. He took reserve. And he's like, oh, that's a nice surprise.
Yeah.
He had his Jambo wannabe is what I call it, and. But now he did good up there. I mean, he's a real consistent cook. He's one of them cooks a lot like QSN Bernie. They'll sneak up and bite you. You know, they'll get one call or two calls and tell people three calls and stuff being the top five. And you don't even expect them. They come out of nowhere and, you know, just take it all sometimes. But not just one hell of a cook. I enjoyed talking to Jeff, and, you know, we talk, you know, every other week at least, see how things are going, and, of course, he's got to bring me some sauce, but, you know, he's a hell of a nice guy. You know, it's just really good. You know, we met you, where's the first place I met you? I met you somewhere else.
Yeah.
And I can't think of where I met you. Anyway, you know, like what we did at Shelby, you know, we all went out on Saturday night and after going to, what, two different restaurants, finally found a place to eat.
Yeah. Well, at least those folks told us not to eat at that one. I think that was a good
move. Yeah, that was. But it was like, well, the years passed, it was good, but they changed ownership. Uh-oh.
Yeah.
When you order a drink and there wasn't no alcohol in it, you should have known it's time to go.
That's right. Well, also one of your other sponsors, I got to see the new chicken cooker as well as the cooker Southern Q's putting out now that Barry Johnson with Swiggin' Pigs cooking on.
Yeah.
And I was impressed looking at him. That chicken cooker, I mean, Barry got, I think, third place in chicken in his first competition using it.
He didn't even get to season it.
Yeah, it's nice. But, you know, you're talking about Pensacola. I mean, it was so cool because, you know, I had a couple guys there for a class, you know, and, you know, that kind of validates what I'm doing when they can
exactly. See
those kind of results. And I was up in Kentucky in February giving a class to a group of folks, so it's always good when you can back it up.
Yeah, it is. I mean, when you went grand and doing a class and everything, too, I mean, I was actually doing a judge was going for his master judging up there in Banjo-Kazooie this past year when I won reserve. So, you know, let him know that, you know, it wasn't, he liked all the food, too. He said, all this is really, really good. So I thought my brisket would have scored better. I still think to date that's the best brisket I ever cooked. But out of that crowd, you had a lot of Bull and Tuffy and Johnny and Cereal Grillers and Munchin' Hogs and Pork Barrel and all them in it. You know, it's
Cereal Griller was there. I mean, that was a heck of a lineup.
Yeah, it was. And you know, that's what makes these grands even better when you have a huge contest like that and you pull one out, and you know, let you know, you know, you can go through a slump. Everybody rides the wave, but you can go through a slump. So, well, I'm not cooking all that great, and all of a sudden, bam, one just comes out of nowhere and surprises the heck out of you. And where's your next contest you're going to? You stay down in that area for a while, don't you?
Yeah, I'll be in Mobile, Alabama next weekend, and I'm off the weekend in between. If anybody's interested in classes or whatever, they can hit me up. I mean, I do them at the contest, too, but that costs you more. So I'm coming back to Pensacola at some friend's house and stay for the weekend in between Mobile and Hammond. I've thought about going up to Tupelo, but I got my motorcycle down here with me so I can hopefully start enjoying some Florida weather if it warms up. and then I'll come back for a week, and then I'll go up to Hammond, which is a great, great competition. And then it's their 10th-year anniversary, so I'm sure they're going to have all kinds of fine things. And I'm actually doing they have the past champions up there do things for the community and the sponsors and stuff. I'm doing a grilling class on Wednesday night up there.
Cool.
So that ought to be interesting. And then from there we go to a state park on Lake Pontchartrain with, I don't know, 8 or 9 teams, and we stay there during the week, and then we'll go cook Slidell. The nice thing about that state park and everybody there, you know, Thursdays and Saturdays are always like what I enjoy the most about a competition. I like to get in there early, and I like to stay late so you get a chance to visit and the stress of the competition. Well, this way you get that whole week to chill, visit, relax. You know, you get to know everybody a little bit better. You get to get updates on the family. Real updates other than just how's everybody doing. And
right.
We take turns cooking. Well, I say we pretty much delegated to Barry Johnson. He's excellent cook no matter what he's cooking. He does some mean steaks and pizza on that keg, and, you know, we do a fish fry, and, of course, then we're eating po'boys for lunch, and it's a good week because there's no stress. You just get up, relax, and, you know, we have big breakfast with a bunch of teams, and, you know, lunches, people go different places, and dinner, we all get together and, you know, have some tasty beverages and laugh and carry on. It's a really good time.
Yeah, I'm going to try to meet Bear. I had him on the show one time last year, and hopefully one of these contests will cross paths, and which we should this year, one way or another. But, yeah, he's an excellent cook, like I said. I think him and Scott, I think he kind of came up with the design on that chicken cooker, and Scott kind of made it a reality.
Right, and they've worked together. You know, I think Barry offered some suggestions on the other cooker. And, I mean, Barry ran it on Friday just to, you know, it was cold and wanted to run it and make sure everything was going good. And it burns a very clean fire. And I know you talked to him about it. He was a little worried about being so clean. He's used to, you know, we're by each other frequently. He goes, he cooked on a backwoods for so long. He goes, I was just worried what it was going to taste like, but he loves it. It's cooking with great smoke flavor, steady. I mean, he's thrilled to death with it. I mean, I think they're continuing to, you know, make little adjustments here and there, but he's very happy. That's a good-looking cook.
Yeah, I've got one of what I call my stretch limo. It's a TNT. I've got an old TNT I got from Scott last year, and then he gave me a big one, like what, not the chicken cooker, but a big cooker over his bare head down there. And he's made a few adjustments. You know, he's always listening to people who cook on these, kind of make them, you know, tweak them, make them a little bit better and stuff. I mean, the design itself was pretty much already there. And
right.
I tell you what, I mean, I've won a grand on mine. I've got a second-place finish out of 42 teams and a third-place finish out of 42 teams cooking on it. That's just this year. So, you know, it's a very consistent cooking machine, so to speak. And, you know, I really enjoy it. And I've got one of my trailers sold. I think it's going out to a new home on Thursday. But Scott's got me a new one I get next week up there. And the one that Barry had down there, is actually got a home Wednesday. So I got to meet Scott, pick that up, a boy up in Rock Hill, up the smoke with Brian Teague. He's a big backwoods fanatic.
Yep.
And he saw these things cook. A buddy of mine, Michael Harmon, from Time Out of Smokehouse, bought my old TNT. He saw this thing cook, called me up, hey, when can I come look at one of these things? Drove all the way down from Rock Hill one night, come down just to look at it. Gave me a down payment. I said, have you one in 2 weeks? So he's getting his Wednesday night. So
you talk about backwoods cookers. I mean, Barry, over the last numerous years, has been one of the very best backwoods cookers out there.
Yeah.
I mean, he's you know, he's a top 20 team, top 10 the last several years on backwoods. I mean, he wore that competitor basically out. And for him to switch with success and how well he knows how it works, that speaks volumes of the quality of the cooker.
Well, anybody who knows who these teams are, I mean, it does, because, like I said, Brian, even in his own right in South Carolina, he's been runner-up in South Carolina Barbecue Association 3 years in a row on his backwoods. And for him to switch, you know, which he's going to use it for catering, too, because it can, you know, you can fit a lot of meat on there. But that just gives you more options on where you can put your meat. You know, you don't have to cram it all on one side or all this. And, you know, it's a testament that, you know, he's seen how these things are. Well, as soon as I opened that thing up, showed him what it did and the tuning plate and all that in it, and he's like, you got me.
Yeah.
When can
I
get one?
You can put whole pans in it.
Yeah.
Front to back.
Nine whole pans in that thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's sweet. I see benefit. You know, I use my Lang. The 60 or the 84 for a lot of the catering that I do. And, you know, I cook all on wood stuff, but I keep thinking about going to something else to make my life easier. And
you want me, You want me to tell you what I do for a sandwich shop? I put my butts on at 9 o'clock at night, 2:25, set my guru. I come to bed. I get up at 7 o'clock, wrap them, put them back in there, come home at lunch, they're done. I mean, it's that simple. And I use about a bag and a half of that Chef's Choice Royal Oak. And I'll tell you what, man, it just burns great. I might empty the ash pan once, and then it might be close to getting full on the second one, but it's like clockwork. I mean, every week I do that. And I'll have anywhere from 10 to 16 bucks on there. And every one of them gets done right at the same time.
That's very, very sweet.
So for catering and stuff, I think Randall Knight from Nars is going to get one because he said, oh, I can get. And that's a big thing. You know, a lot of us volunteers are doing catering, and, you know, you got to stay up. If you got one the next day, you either have to cook it the day before or stay up with it all night. Shit, with this thing, man, all you got to do is just set it and forget it and walk away.
I like that.
You know, we're not getting any younger, Mike, so, you know.
No. But I guess, like my wonderful wife says, she's like Peter Pan. She's never going to grow up.
Yeah.
Well, move a little slower.
I got another buddy of yours, your cohort from this past weekend, I guess, that shared the stage and tried to jinx you on your grand. I got Mr. Big Jim Stencil on the line. How are you doing, Jim?
Good, man. How are you doing?
We're doing very well. But I got your cohort on the other line. He said after you got called, you came over to jinx him and wish him well on his grand.
No, it was either going to be him or me, so we could kind of figure to do the math on that. But I hope he got enough money to buy some new tires for that big trailer he's got.
I'm leaving at 6 o'clock in the morning to go get those takeoffs up in Jackson, Mississippi.
Yeah, he was looking all dumbfounded when they called me. I said, well, it's you, buddy. And he said, no, it can't be me. But it was a pretty good contest. We had a good time.
Nice weather. I mean, outside of the cold, at least it didn't rain.
Yeah, the rain was tough last year.
The four that I've missed down there was last year. Our youngest daughter was in the hospital. If I was going to miss it, that sounded like the one to miss because. But right about turn-in times, they said the sky just opened up and just didn't stop till sometime that night.
Oh, yeah, it rained straight through turn-ins, through awards, through everybody loading out. I mean, it was just pouring down rain. But, you know, hey, that's the way it works. If you're going to go to contest, it's going to rain occasionally. And if you're not prepared for it, you'll pay for it later.
Yes, you will.
Well, the weekend before down there in Perry, Georgia, you know, luckily we were in the trailer, so we didn't have to get down on the ground. And I'll tell you what, it rained so hard down there. People were in knee boots and the mud. Now, these guys are troopers, I will admit it. They were tromping around the mud that was probably calf high, doing their cooks, doing everything they can to keep it going. And I said, more power to y'all, man. I'm going to stay up here on this tailgate and, you know, put off the ground.
Yeah,
but
it's a factor. It's one of those factors we tell people all the time. It's not just getting your stuff in the box. It's everything involved with it. It could be, you know, hot, 100 degrees, or the wind could be blowing, or it could be raining or thunderstorming, and you know, we still have to keep doing what we're doing. And if you're not prepared for that kind of stuff, you know, you'll read about it after you're done. That's for sure.
That's right.
Is this your biggest contest you did, Jim, as far as your placing and everything? Or
no, I mean, I've got a grand. It's just been a while. I mean, I've been in the top 10 a bunch, you know, in the last couple of years. I'm just really been knocking on the door and not been able to put all four categories together. But we pretty much, when we turned everything in, we just looked at each other and just said there was nothing else. I mean, I couldn't have done anything different or better. Presentation, cooking times, everything was dead on point. And you get a lot of those, but not this one. I didn't feel apprehensive about anything. I said, well, look, I can't do anything more than I've just done. And when you end up with those results, it just, you know, it just gives you a little bit of confidence moving into the next tournament.
Yeah, it's good when you get down. Like we won our grand down the lines last year. You know, I think it's the first time in a long time. You know, Jan's always been my taster, and she's like, she didn't bitch about one thing I cooked. I'm like, that's a shock. Use it for something. And she said it, and it went smooth. And I'm like, oh my God, here we go. You know, it's like when I have a lot of adversity, I do well. And we really didn't have any down there. It had nice, smooth, easy cook. Like, still, we hit our marks, hit our times, hit our temperatures, and, you know, boxes look good. And we're like, well, you know, it's up to the judges. We felt like we had a good cook, but you don't want to tell everybody, man, we smoked it. So that's just the kiss of death right there.
No, I mean, we you know, I was right in the middle of Barry and Mike and you know, Kathy and John and the rest of those crew. I mean, I was camped right in between all those folks cooking, and they all – you know, had pretty good cooks. They were all, you know, we were all talking when we got to the awards, and you know, Mike said he didn't think his chicken was all that good, and, you know, I think Barry thought most of his stuff was pretty good, and the Swifts thought their stuff was pretty good. So, I mean, I think, you know, you had a pretty good, tough crowd there. I don't think it was, you know, who's gonna win this other than who's going to miss something and not get to win this. It's just, there was just so many good cooks around there. I mean, you can stand in that thing and turn a circle and look. I mean, Myron's crowd was there. I mean, there was a bunch of good cooks there. It wasn't just a regular, you know, I don't know how many teams it was, total 38 teams or something like that. But, I mean, it was a tough crowd. These guys are making their way around the Gulf Coast, and it'll be even tougher in Mobile next week.
Yeah, well, down there, just looking at the list, I mean, usually in some contests, everybody agrees, you got some teams we call fillers that just get started or – two or three a year, you know, we just kind of call them fillers. But down there was very few of those. I was looking at the names, and, you know, if you've been in barbecue for the last two or three years, you know 90% of these teams have been out there, you know. So, I looked at it. It was a tough crowd. There's no doubt about that.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like it used to be 10 or 12 years ago. I mean, you come into a contest with 25 or 30 teams, I mean, you could count on your hand who was going to be in the top five. I mean, it really was really easy to do. Now it's just not like that. You've got a bunch of folks doing classes. The learning curve's not as sharp. I mean, you got guys can come straight into this thing, buy them a pellet cooker or buy them a stick burner and go take a couple of classes and get beyond what took some of us years to just learn, you know, and adapt to. And so it's a tougher deal. I mean, it's like NASCAR is now. You got 10 or 15 drivers that can win the whole thing every year where, you know, there are field fillers in NASCAR. What we do, I mean, you go 50 teams, there's 40 teams, 35 teams that could win at any possible time. I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot. I mean, you get one top five and two or three right there hovering around the top 10, and you can take the whole thing. So if you look at the numbers and the points on how all these contests go, they're very close. And the cook teams are really good. There's a lot of great pit master guys out there. And the equipment is so much more advanced now than it was then. And I know you were talking about cookers on before I got on, but these cookers are a whole lot more advanced than they were before. You got gurus, you got digital, you know, thermometers, fans, everything. And then you just got people that are cooking 25 events a year. And if you're cooking 25 events a year, it's not hard to stay on your game. I mean, you're doing the same thing week after week after week, and it's hard to beat somebody that cooks every single week, is cooking a contest every single week, as opposed to somebody that's cooking a contest and then maybe practicing two or three weeks and then cooking another one. You just can't – you're just going to fall off. You need to stay sharp. There's a whole lot to be said about 10 o'clock in the morning till 2 o'clock in the afternoon. If you're not sharp in those 4 hours, you're not going to do it. And the only way to stay sharp is to stay out there and stay on the competitive edge of it. That's how I feel anyways.
I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, practice makes perfect, too. I've done a lot of practice cooks over the winter. And talking to David Buska from Butcher Barbecue, he said he's done, you know, we're trying different things. And he's been doing it. This is probably the most he's done in practice cooks in all season. So, you know, we're both gearing up, ready to go. Like I said, my first KCBS is Kings Mountain. Everybody else is getting a really big head start in front of me, but they do it every year.
Well, I mean, there's a lot more of events now than there used to be, and they're a lot closer to Georgia. I mean, Georgia this year will have, I think, 21 KCBS events. 5 years ago, they barely had six, and 5 years before that, they only had one or two. So teams that are in Georgia and South Carolina and Tennessee and Alabama, they can drive 2.5 hours to a contest anywhere they want to go almost every weekend now. So there's a lot more contests available, so teams tend to cook a few more events than they would normally cook because they don't have to go as far. I mean, when I started doing this, you had to go North Carolina. Everything was 4 hours away. There was nothing. And, you know, Jim, you're from Augusta or down in that Evans area. I live in Covington, so I'm just up the road from you. But you know yourself, there wasn't a whole lot going on in this vicinity until just recently in the last 3 or 4 years. So we would have to drive 4 or 5 hours away to get to any decent contest. So, you know, our numbers, I mean, I think I cooked 19 events last year, which is way more than I'd like to cook. But, you know, sometimes you just get the bug and you go out and you go do it.
So we cooked 19 KCBS events last year, and we did 30 events total. And you know, we did some SBNs, we did a couple of SCBAs, we did an SBA last year. And like you said, I was, other than Nashville and, you know, Myrtle Beach, which is 3.5 hours from me, within 3.5 hours of my house, I did all those contests with the exception of one. And I could have done more. But, you know, you've got to put a limitation on some of this stuff.
Well, I just don't have time. I mean, I have caterings, and then I have demo stuff, and then I have classes I do with the Primo guys, and then, you know, most all my catering is all corporate catering, so I go out and do all these events for these people, and you know, they want it when they want it, and that's how I make my living. I make my living catering. I'm like, you know, some of these other guys. I've based my business off of what I did cooking in the contest, and it's turned into a full-blown business. So if somebody calls and says they want to feed 500 people, I mean, I want to go cook the contest, but I also want to make sure I pay my bills at the end of the month, so I got to go do that. And a lot of these people will book these weddings and rehearsal dinners and stuff like that a year in advance just to make sure they get, because there's only so many weekends in a year. So for some of these guys, it's hard to get out and cook as many. I'd love to cook more events, but I just don't have the time.
Well, anybody would tell you, you take that guaranteed money anytime it comes.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, it's, you have to do it. You have to do it. But I'm pretty lucky. I've got some good clients. They book early. A lot of times it's during the week or it's on weekends, you know, and I work my schedule around it, and I try to cook an event. I mean, I'll, you know, I don't know about the rest of y'all, but usually about the 1st of August from Dillard, it doesn't stop until, you know, after Cummings. You know, it goes for 3 months at that point in time. You go straight through October and into November now. And now with the last contest being in Calhoun in December, you know, it our season used to be, you know, 2 or 3 months off. Now it's 3 or 4 weeks off, it seems like. It doesn't seem like there's any time off. So it's almost a full-time, year-round thing. So
if I'd Young Harris, it'd have been a contest. I would have competed all 12 months.
Yeah.
I would be competing this year, all 12 months. And that's tough on family. That's tough on, you know, you're driving all these places and stuff. I mean, we had one contest in Maryland for a couple of years. Then we got two, and we stayed that way for 6 years. So if you wanted to do a contest, there was a contest in Pennsylvania. You had to go up north, or you had to go south, you know, or Tennessee.
Right.
But it seems like
everybody's got their own set of kind. I mean, we have, you know, with the Georgia Barbecue Championship, we have a whole series here where there's 18 events included in that. And so if you only have to cook 5 of those 18 events, it's pretty easy for guys who are cooking 15 or 20 events to get those 5 and to get an extra advantage on getting some points or some money leading to that. So you can stay in Georgia or you can come to Georgia and cook as many of those events as you want, and you're not too far traveling away. I mean, I know you're in Maryland, but you get that big house you're driving around in, and some of these other guys have the same thing. They have these big old huge motorhomes, and that's what they do. You know, they want to drive around. Me, I'm comfortable with a couple of grills and a couple of tents. I don't care about the weather. You know, I'm not there for the weather. It's going to rain, it's going to be hot, or it's going to be windy. It doesn't affect me. It doesn't bother me. You know, it's just the way it is. So there's too many options now for these guys to go and cook as many events as they want or as few events as they want. And it's, I know that gas is up and everything as a whole in the market is more expensive, but the contests are more available to us. So you have to drive less or be less. I mean, a lot of these contests I'll go to this year, I'll drive in on Friday. I don't even need a hotel room. I'm going to stay at the site all night Friday night. So I'll just drive in Friday and then drive back home Saturday. Keeps my costs down, you know, contest entry fees and meets, you know, where normally it would average $1,000. I mean, for somebody like me, if you just went hotel or whatever, it averaged $1,000 a contest. It drops it down to $500 or depending on what you spend on meat, you know, $400 and change. It's an easier deal. You can cook more events if you've got that in your budget.
That's why we cook out of the trailer we cook with, because really, truthfully, we don't have to have a hotel room.
Right.
And people say, well, how do you get by so easy? Well, you know, we bring food with us a lot of times. We, you know, we do potluck dinners and all that. And, yeah, you know, some Saturday nights we'll go out. If we spend Saturday night, we'll go out with the gang and, you know, partake in festivities. But that's nothing we wouldn't do here either. You know, easily go out on Saturday night and eat anyway. But having a place just to crash for a night or two, I mean, that takes another $100-$150 off the bill right there.
And, yeah, know, sure figure, it does.
I figure on $500 for contest and some throwing some for gas and, you know, so $600 max. And people say, I don't see how you can do it that cheap. You know, I got this. And I said, well, I don't have all that crap. You know, I've got a little trailer paid for. All my crap's paid for. And I just, you know, look up when I win something, I'll go ahead and book me 4 or 5 contests. And then I don't have to worry about getting those. All I got to do is worry about getting my meat. And
listen, I think everybody can accommodate themselves depending on how they want to feel and how they want to hang out. You know, you can go get a motor home or a travel trailer or whatever it is you get, or a big 20-foot trailer with air conditioning, kitchen, and whatever. Yeah, I mean, I've done all that. I've had those big trailers. I just decided it was better for me, and I'd stay more focused if I stayed on a little bit more of a roughing it kind of deal. I stay more focused if I have a little bit more to do. I mean, although you know, you guys see me if you go to contest. I mean, I'm in there. I don't hardly leave my booth. I do what I got to do, and I stay around and get things done. So it's not hard to pack up 2 tents and 2 tables when your grills are mounted on the trailer. And, you know, you can bam and it's over. You're done. So for me, I like that. Gives me a little more edge. But for some people, they like it, the comforts. They want to lay in their motor home, watch TV in the air conditioner, or do whatever. I mean, that's, you know, everybody's got their own little deal, and I think that's what makes our sport as great as it is. And I call it a sport because we all travel around and do this. This is not something, you know, if you're not excited on Saturday morning and your adrenaline's not pumping when you're doing that, I mean, you know, you become a field filler as far as I'm concerned. You know, you got to be. Listen, I love what I do. I love this. It's exciting. I mean, the whole time Saturday, I'm good. You know, if you don't get excited about getting your name called and trying to win and doing what you do, then you need to find something else to do. I mean, really?
I agree. I will say, you know, and I do a couple out of the pickup truck every year just because I don't want to keep winterized and all that other stuff. And I'm not a big TV person, so you very seldom will see my TV on unless the fans. But just with the amount of miles that we do, I mean, I'm down here for 5 weeks. If I was staying in hotels all that time and doing all that,
yeah, different. It's a different deal. That's what I was talking about. If you wish to travel and make that loop, and that's what you're doing, the motorhome is a perfect thing to do it with. But for me, I'm always within 4 or 5 hours of my house. I'm always going to drive back home and do what I got to, because I have stuff to do during the week, too. I mean, I tell people all the time, I'm the busiest unemployed guy you know. For somebody who doesn't really have a job, I got a lot to do. So I got to go home and take care of business and then go back. So it is just what you want to do, what you want to make out of it. It's fine. That's why it takes all kinds. That's why we have this crazy thing we do, which is barbecue. You know, it's... Everybody's got their own deal, and everybody, you know, there's a million different cookers and a million different options and different ways. That's why all these sites and the power requirements and the water is such a big deal when when all these organizers start putting on these events, it takes a lot to do it. But I don't think ill of anybody else to do. You know, you want a motorhome, drive it, knock yourself out. I'm just not doing it.
Well, you know, I look forward to barbecue kind of like hunting. You know, when you lose that buck fever, it's time to give it up and do something else.
That's right.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's my life thrill of a kill, but you know, barbecue is much more than that. It's, you know, just getting out there and seeing friends. And, you know, we got friends up in Atlanta, you know, Mike and Dan and all them from up around Maryland and stuff. You know, we consider them our friends. We go out and hang out with them on, you know, either Thursday night or Saturday night. And we got North Carolina buddies, South Carolina buddies, and I know you do too, Jim, and, you know, Alabama buddies. And, you know, it's good to go to these different events to see them and just kind of hang out and, you know, see what you've been up to for the last 4 or 5 months, you know?
Listen, it's like a secondary family for everybody, I think. I mean, as dysfunctional as our family can be at home, it's as dysfunctional as it can be out on the barbecue circuit, too. But I don't believe there's anybody out there that wouldn't do anything to help anybody, their brother or their neighbor out, if they needed something. I mean, that's just what we do. I think that's the type of people we are in general as far as barbecue people that cook these contests and the organizers and the judges and everybody. I think we're all just, you know, most of us, you know, if you came to my booth and said, look, I just forgot half of my stuff or whatever. If I've got something to give you or lend you, I'll give it to you. You know, it's just how we work. I think that's what makes our deal great. Just in my opinion is everybody, you know, we're all competitive, but at the end of the day, you know, if we want to beat somebody, we want to beat somebody on an even playing field, and I think that's what we're all about.
Well, and I think that goes back to what you said earlier, Jim, getting to hear your name called with all those folks there, all your friends, you know?
It's just, I love it. I tell people all the time, they say, well, what do you love about it? I said, I really can't tell you what I love about it. I love everything about it. And it's hard to explain. And once you get somebody involved in it or they see what you're doing, my friends and my family outside of barbecue, they think I'm crazy, but they know. They understand. You know, they see what I do, how I do, when I do, and everything about it. So they understand the passion and the true value that I've the love of what I do is. And if you can find something like that, you don't have to explain it to everybody. People can see it. So, and I think all of us do that. We all love what we do as far as the barbecue goes. I think I hear people tell me all the time, well, I want your job. You want my job until you do it. But
amen.
You got to love it to do it, you know?
Love. You know, it sounds funny.
You got to love it to do it.
Jan's got a lot of customers down at her shop, and, you know, they want to keep updated on what I do, and half of them have never even met me. And we saw a couple at Costco, and we're in Jan's vehicle, and he goes, oh, Janwich, the big dude, Mr. Janwich? I said, no, I'm the Jimwich. And he goes, oh, I was eating that several times. He said, so how's the barbecue? And have you placed me yet this year or whatever? And I mean, I never even knew this guy. But with Jan being down there, you know, they keep up with what's going on the barbecue and stuff. They think it's cool as hell. You know, she doesn't have by no means have any room to put the trophies up in there, which I wish she could, but, you know, it's kind of an open type sandwich shop. And but, you know, everybody goes down the fireside and sees the trophies sitting up there, because I take them all down there and pile them up on the shelves and stuff and try to see if they can guess which ones are new and stuff. But, you know, we've been pretty blessed. We've been real fortunate on where we've come from and where we've been and hopefully where we're heading. So it's a lot of fun. Like I said, it's great seeing y'all out there and just having a blast. And, you know, it's like we haven't really done anything last. So it's like, well, it's time to get out there and, you know, start seeing some people, meeting some new teams, and, you know, bonding with the buzz that we have now.
Absolutely. It's barbecue season. It's time to go, you know. I mean, I'm always hopped up to get out there and start doing it. And the Pensacola thing just got me going. But I've been sick ever since I got home, so I'm just trying to recover so I can get back out and go do some more of it. But it's going to get busy for everybody. We got a lot of contests here to do, and I'm signed up for, I don't know, about a dozen already, and I got at least a dozen more I got to talk to folks about to see if I can get them worked out. But I'm excited. you know, we'll get it all done and get going, and let's get a little warmer weather. That was a little too frigid there in Pensacola for all that foolishness.
Yeah, I hope we're gonna have better weather in Mobile, Jim, because it was too cool.
Now, Jim, what about the contest in Rome? I know we touched base on it a little earlier on Facebook. Are they doing anything up there this year or not?
Well, they're going to have the air show. Their problem was they wanted some sponsorship for the barbecue contest itself. And, you know, it's just one of them deals where they required a certain amount of sponsorship or they didn't want to have any discussions or it was just a little too much more than they wanted to bite off. And we had those conversations prior to the first contest. And I just don't think they're going to be able to pull it off this year without the financial support of another sponsor. And also, they've been hit by that craziness with the sequestrian or whatever crap that I don't want to get into that. But now they're saying that the Thunderbirds may not be able to perform there because of the the economic stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that starts April 1st. Anybody scheduled at that point in time or whatever, but they're still in the negotiations, and without the support of, you know, 40 or 50,000 people coming out there, they're just going to have a hard time pulling off an air show that costs that much money. You know, it costs a lot of money to put on an air show, and the barbecue part of it was the smallest part of their budget, but you know, they had to make sure they could cover the air show first, and that's kind of where we're at. But it's not been from lack of trying. I mean, I've had dozens of phone calls from cook teams and judges and everybody that really wants that event to happen, and I wish I could make it happen, but, you know, I can't write a check big enough to make that happen. That's not what I can do, for sure. But it was an awesome venue, awesome event. It's just not going to happen, I don't think.
Yeah, that was you brought a lot of teams in there last year. I mean, for the first year, you had, 48 teams, I think?
I think we had 47 teams, pro teams, and then another 7 or 8 backyard teams. But it was just the overall of the whole thing. I mean, I think the teams thoroughly enjoyed it. I can't tell you how many phone calls I got after the fact. Man, please let me know when you send out the applications. We're coming back. And I even had them call the last couple of weeks. Hey, man, just drop the prize money. Y'all figure out a way to make it happen. And I'm like, I mean, I can't make them let me come in there and set up a contest.
Yeah.
So, it's their property. It's their field. It's their event. And they're just not willing to financially get themselves in that position, which hurts my feelings. You know, I wish we could do it. I feel like we could have 50 or 60, even 75 teams in there cooking that contest.
Like I said, if you could drop the prize money and get the teams in it, because it just kind of made – that was a really good weekend event for the whole family there with that air show there. It was awesome. I mean
– Yeah, I mean, I was – you know, I mean, it ended on a sour note with Mr. Sam passing on us. But, you know, these are the things that happen. You can't control these kind of things. But we really wanted to come back and make it stronger. And they wanted to change it to a Saturday-Sunday contest as well because they wanted to keep the people there. And they said it just looked really empty on Sunday when all the cook teams left. And I said, well, I don't see it being a problem. I think we can probably accommodate a Saturday-Sunday event as long as we kind of, you know, rush it along and get them out of there Sunday as quick as we can. And they said that wasn't a problem. So, but there's a few other hurdles, you know, power and water and logistics and insurance. And most people have no idea what it costs and what it takes to put on an event of that magnitude. And so we're just going to move on to the next one and do what we got to do to try to bring it back in 2014. As long as they have an air show, we'll have a chance.
Yeah, Facebook was lit up after that event. I remember all that quite vividly. And, you know, it was like, can't wait to go back next year. And other teams were inquiring about it then. And you know,
oh, they're still calling me. I'm still getting emails and everything. But I just don't see it happening.
Yeah, sometimes it just doesn't work out. It doesn't work out. So, you know, but hopefully next year you get a good sponsor in there to help out with the barbecue side of it and get it back rolling. Because like you said, it's got the potential to have, you know, 75, 80 teams easy. And,
yeah, I mean, that field is pretty big. I mean, that whole area right there, you could stack them in there all the way to where that other airplane was, that P-38 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's big. There's a lot of room in there.
Where's your next event at, Jimbo?
I'm supposed to go to Mobile to do some rep training with the KCBS people. But I think I end up in Cornelia or something like that at the Apple Blossom Festival first. And then I think it just falls like dominoes after that, boom, boom, boom. And I think I'm in the Evans at the Banjo BBQ. I mean, I think I've got, once it starts to get into April, it falls into place. I'm going to have a cooking class here on April 13th. I think I'm going to do 20 people. I think I've got 14 people. So just doing a small class, nothing big, just basic barbecue stuff with Primos and stick burners. And everything else is on the road, going, going, going. You know how it works.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, when you come to Banjo-Bukit, you're literally coming to my backyard. So.
Yeah, I know. That'll make it that much nicer when we beat you.
That's what everybody says.
Listen, that's a big old contest, man. I've heard a bunch of stuff of that. But I have to always go to Brasstown because they're part of the GBC. And
right.
Now this year, Banjo-Bukit is part of the GBC. So... Young Harris has moved their date to the Throwdown, which is in February, actually, this year. And there's no spring event for them. So that's why we could get Banjo-BBQ in there. And they really wanted to be a part of it. So it's a big lineup of contests. If you go to the Georgia Barbecue Championship website, you can see which ones are involved. But I think it's 18 total this year. And the prize money went up. Too, so it, I think it doubled. Prize money doubled overall. So we've got some big money going on this time. But somebody's got to get out there and jump on Bubba, or he's going to win it again. So y'all got to quit letting him get ahead of everybody.
I think he's got a bullseye on his back. Well, you know, last year I think only did 6 or 7, just because I was trying to. You know, I was going for SBN Team of the Year and got that.
Right.
We're going to try to repeat this year. We've already off to a really good start. So, but, you know, there's a lot of contests conflicted with, you know, the GBC ones that I did. And I love Heather Senior to death, and I really want to come to do Cornelia, but I'm going to go up to Kings Mountain this year and pick that one instead of Cornelia. And,
right.
I'm going to go towards the North Carolina side of that. I can do 3 of the 4 up there easy. And, so I'm looking forward to getting started in the North Carolina series anyway.
Yeah, well, they got Franklin, Tryon, and
Maggie Valley,
I think, is the championship on that one.
Well,
they have another in North Carolina also.
Yeah,
do which one?
It's all North series. It's Lexington, Kings Mountain, Kannapolis, and Salisbury.
Oh, okay, I didn't know about those.
So all those within about 3.5 hours of my house. So
right.
I saw those North Carolina contests and come out, you know, decent and, you know, go that route and still do my GBC, get my GBCs in because I'm probably dropping 1 or 2 GBCs, probably picking up 2 more, you know, with Banjo-BBQ being one of them.
Right.
You know, I'll still get my, hopefully get 7 or 8 in this year. And
well, I mean, you know, 2 years ago, Tuffy did just the minimum amount, and he was second. So it doesn't really I mean, if you put 5 good ones in there, I mean, that's all it takes, really. So it's not of how many of you that you cook. It's, you know, the numbers you put up as you go.
Yeah, well, I mean, Tuffy cooked 13 contests last year and was in the top 15 and overall, as well as beef and ribs, and, I mean, you know, he.
Well, when you stack them in there and you end up with reserve or third or fourth, or every single time you go in there, you get 1 or 2 calls, a first place call or a second place call. Those points multiply, especially in the contest he was in, where there's 50 plus teams or whatever. It's the numbers can add up quick, and I think people mistake that the more you cook, the better it is. But I think it's the better you cook in each event, the better it works out for you. I don't think that it's quantity as much as it is a quality. And we're not talking about, you know, anybody. We're talking about Tuffy. So this guy, he can show up anywhere and beat everybody. You know, he's not just a TV guy. He can cook, man. This guy don't play around.
Well, I got one up on him. My first grand, I had beat him for my first grand. So that made it that much more special. I mean, you're right.
I compete against him about 10, 15 times a year. So, yeah.
Tuffy's a tough cookie, man, no matter where he goes. And
he's a super guy, though.
Decided to do a class. I can't imagine how many proteins would be in there taking that class.
Nah, he said he wasn't planning on doing a class anytime soon, is what he told me. But
he said when he retired, probably would.
I don't see him retiring anytime soon.
Well, you know, he's one of the busiest men in barbecue, and for him to pull off that, you know, run that rush and do a couple of these contests in between his filming and stuff, I mean, that just shows you, I mean, his game is on. I mean, you know,
he's busy. He's a busy guy.
No wonder he's so skinny. He's got two restaurants in the works right now.
Yeah, he's gonna be too big to talk to anybody for several years. That's what I told him the other day when I saw him in Pensacola.
I don't think that ever happened.
Yeah, no, he's a good guy, man. If you call him, he'll answer his phone. I mean, if you send him a text message, he'll text message you back. He's not that kind of a guy, but that's what I always kid him about is he's all Hollywood. He can't talk to anybody. He's gonna have his people call somebody's people and that kind of shit. But he just says whatever. So, he's a great guy. There, you know, the pit masters in general. It's good for what we do. I mean, it brings a light on what we do. It helps us bring sponsors into some of these events. It gives us all opportunities to do things we wouldn't normally get to do. I mean, I got to go to Houston a couple weeks ago to the livestock rodeo and cook dinner for Jeff Arnett, the master distiller of Jack Daniel's. I mean, who gets to go do that? I got to plate 12 dinners. That's what I did. So it ain't a bad day when you get to go do that kind of stuff. So hats off to the people that keep putting those shows on, because whatever makes us, you know, visible in the public eyes makes us all successful in the end. So I'll do it any time.
It's amazing how somebody kind of just stumble across one of those shows, then they just get captivated by it. And then you see these people on the street, are you in it? Are you in it? No, tried it this year, didn't make it, but, you know, maybe next year. And they're like, man, do you know any of those people? I said, I know just about all of them. Really?
Yeah.
No, they just don't know how tight-knit the barbecue family is.
Yeah,
and,
it's a crazy thing. I mean, it's good for what we do, man. It's there's no negatives in there.
No, I mean, all the exposure, like you said, Jim, is going to just be that much better for the barbecue teams looking for sponsors, the barbecue events looking for sponsors. You know, it's great that, you know, I think just about every KCBS event that I know of goes to a really good charity. And that's another thing, you know, a lot of people don't realize, you know, they look for ways to raise money. And if you do it right and don't start off too big, you know, you can put on an event pretty reasonable and, you know, raise some money for kids or food banks or whatever you're doing it for. I mean, it's a great way to do a, you know, a good charity, a good possible organization. So
there's always room to give back. I mean, there's always room to give back. And I think most everybody we deal with in this deal all does something for charity. They all cook butts, or they'll do some, you know, some kind of cook or donate something for some kind of charity to help people raise money. So I think in overall, barbecue people in general do a lot for charitable organizations in their communities and other places. You know, they do what they can do to help out. And as long as, you know, there's people like that in our sport, you'll never get any gripe from me or anybody like that. I mean, that's just what you need to do. You know, you can give back. Always try to give back something. I do a lot of stuff for the USO. I do a lot of stuff for local charities around here. And we never think twice about it. We don't, you know, if they say, hey, we need you to come do it, we just do it. We don't we don't really scoff away from them. We try to take care of those people because we get to cook barbecue. I mean, that's what we do, man. I don't understand. You know, I mean, I tell people all the time, so you just have, we get to cook barbecue. People let us cook barbecue. We ride around and cook barbecue. It's not a bad day.
No, it's not.
So,
but you know, a lot of it, like I said, a lot of us do catering and stuff, and you know, I see more and more teams getting their sauces, you know, out there and their rubs and everything. And I mean, I think that's great. I mean, you know, there's only 50,000 of them out there already, but no, seriously, I mean, every one of these rubs is pretty much different, and you know, I applaud those that do have a rub that, or a sauce or anything that wins, and they can get out there on the market, and it keeps them competing because they can earn the money on the barbecue side to keep their passion going and everything, and you know, and just have a good time. You know,
hey, more power to them, man. If they can go out and sell their products and fund their hobby or whatever you want to call it, their weekend where they go out and compete, hey, more power to them, man. I mean, I buy rubs and stuff from companies all the time because I know it supports what they do. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of times we use all that rub for big caters and donate and do kind of stuff. I mean, I've got several companies that we get stuff from. I mean, if you got a goodie bag at the GBC banquet, it's got butt rub and the slabs and French's and Frank's Red Hot and Cattleman's Barbecue Sauce. Those people all donate stuff to us to put in their bags. We always, it's easy for us to pick up the phone and call somebody, and they'll always send us 100 packs of whatever to put in goodie bags to donate for whatever. So, I mean, there's always a really good, you know, group of folks out there willing to donate time, money, and product to help somebody else out or to help themselves out, whatever they need to do to try to get their product out there. I mean, they're always willing to give. So I think that, you know, you got to stay on it hard to give back if you can.
Oh, yeah. I've got two other people on the other line that give a lot to barbecue and everything. I've got Jack Waybor and Russ Cornett. Russ is from Two Allergy and Jack's from Mike Catering. And I think Jack's down in Tampa doing a lot of stuff to grill. A lot of people see him on YouTube and stuff, doing the Grill Break episodes and stuff. And how are you two guys doing tonight?
Good, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing well.
Jim,
Russ,
I'm doing
Jack?
Jim, I'm doing fantastic. I'm in the Tampa airport in the car.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you could call in. Now, we're going to have you on here. I know, you know, Jim Stemple said he's got a class coming up, and Mike Richter gives classes throughout the whole year, you know, a lot of them at competitions and stuff, so, you know, you can't really hide anything at the competition class. But y'all got something special going on this weekend down in, is it Somerville?
Yeah, it's Somerville.
It is
a Shrine Club. Go ahead, Jack.
We've got the Carolina Pitmaster Weekend coming on this weekend. We're excited about it. The SPN is going to be involved. Of course, that's all about, you know, great barbecue, great charities, a lot of great things going on. We've got a SPN judging class going on this weekend in conjunction with, you know, the best pitmasters in the state getting together and just really whipping out a great weekend to come a little bit and teach what we do.
Now, what kind of categories will you be going over in this class?
We're doing all five categories: whole hog, Boston butts, brisket, chicken, and ribs. I'll be doing the brisket. Mike Fields is going to be doing whole hog. Russ Cornett's going to be doing the ribs and the Boston butts. And Seth Watari, the man himself, is going to be doing chicken.
Oh, that's good. I think I know most of you guys.
Hey, Jim, this is Mike. Hey, I have to go take care of some things.
That's okay, Mike.
I appreciate you having me on, and look forward to seeing you. I'll see you at one of those Caroline contests if I don't see you before then.
Okay, buddy. Take care, and I'll be rooting for you.
All right. Thank you, buddy.
Right.
Bye.
Be safe, Mike. All right. Bye-bye. So, what have y'all been up to since barbecue season? I know... Russ has a real job. What you been up to, Jack?
Well, I have a real job, too, somewhere along the way. Like I said, I'm traveling right now. I'm working with Craft Six this weekend. We're doing the big sales meeting for Craft in Tampa. Having a great, great time doing that. Just arrived about an hour ago. But it's always fun to get on a plane and fly around and do what we do. And, of course, over the weekend, we shot a, I think we shot three or four episodes of Great TV, which is always a good time. And then supplement that up with, you know, all the other projects that we got going on, SDN and KCS Contest and Mike's Catering, Omar Shrine. Busy, 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 busy.
Yeah, we went down to Charleston to partake in our grand that we wanted before Thanksgiving, and I know Russ knew we couldn't cook from 5 to 8 on Sunday. You know, we had to get back to work and everything, and I think Matt Galvin was a little disappointed that we didn't get to go to it, but we had a nice event. Matt really took care of us, and I mean, my hats off to him that Smokes on the Harbor. He's going to make it bigger and better. He's got a few other things in the works that he was talking to me about, and you know, I told him, I said, you know, between me and Russ and Jack and a couple other guys, you know, if he needed any insight on some of these competitions on what to do about this or that, I said, we've all done several, and we know how some of the really good ones are run, and, you know, something he can take a model off of. And I think, Russ, you're coming to Boss Hog here in Waynesboro.
Yeah, I'm going to be there.
I told Matt that he really needs to come up and channel that contest because, man and Amy, I'm going to tell you what. If there's one contest that I go to every year, not because it's 30 miles from the house, but this plate takes care of the cookers so well, it's unbelievable. I mean, they've got little ladies come out and cook homemade breakfast at 6 o'clock in the morning. You got like 4 different eggs, 4 different styles of sausage. You got 3 different kinds of grits. Jim Stencil was there last year, I know. I mean,
I've been there every year.
I'm looking forward to getting there this year. I was hoping, I sent my application to check in last week. I was hoping that we'd get updated on the website this week, but I haven't seen our name yet. So hoping to get in this contest. I know it's limited to 42 teams, and I'm really looking forward to getting down there.
Well, this fills up pretty quick, and like I said, Jim will attest, and they have snacks and stuff for y'all through the night. Awesome facility. I mean, it's just the whole event is something that all these other events need to be modeled after, because, I mean, just the way, you know, it's very, very cooker-friendly. And that makes you feel like you're at home. And the community comes out and supports the event. Actually, several communities from around there. Even people from Augusta could drive down there. And it's always a great event, man. You will not be disappointed. I guarantee you that.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. That'll be our first KCBS event this year, too. So it'll kind of break the ice for us and get us in all full categories that day. So I'm looking forward to getting down there.
Yeah, I think Seth usually cooks that one, doesn't he?
Yeah, Seth went last year. I think it was his first year there. I need to talk to him about that. See how I'm sure he had a great time, though.
Yeah, there's quite a few Carolina teams that come over and cook in that event. There's a lot of North Carolina teams staying home because that's the same weekend as Kannapolis. And
the list of teams so far is really, really impressive. It's going to be a tough field, I guess, like it usually is out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of really good teams, and they're coming from all over. Like I said, Myron Mixon used to do that, but I think it messes with one of his Memphis and May contests, whatever. And but he used to show up every year too. But it like I said, it's just a really nice event. Like I said, I talked to Matt for a little bit down there in Charleston. You know, I'm looking forward to get back in the Carolina and do some more cooking and stuff. You're seeing all you guys down there and. You know, we were blessed this past year to win the team of the year, and I told them, you know, I got about 5, maybe 6 chances to do 6 more SBNs this year to see if we can repeat. But, you know, these fields are getting tougher and tougher.
Yeah, that makes it better. I mean, it makes us keep on our toes and try to cook better barbecue every week we're out. So, you know, bringing on the competition makes it better for everybody involved.
Well, you know, I was looking at the score. I'm sure y'all looked at the score for the last event. Was the top 3 teams in the year were the top 3 teams how we finished that event. Did y'all notice that?
I noticed it very much so, Jim.
I wasn't bragging. I was just saying, you know.
Since I was right behind you there. That's all right. We had fun doing it.
Oh, yeah, I told Matt. Matt was giving me hell, and I said, you see this on the back of my shirt? And he goes, yeah. I said, that's going to be all you're going to be able to see when I go out and get my grand. That's flipping. And, you know, we didn't get a call in pork, and, I mean, y'all and Jack are both really tough in pork, and I'm like, man, we didn't get a call. So there's, you know, Carolina teams, I'd say it week in and week out on my show. It doesn't matter if you're SCBA or SBN or whatever. I mean, Carolina teams know how to cook pork. And
we've been lucky. We've kind of figured out pork last couple of years, and we've been pretty consistent at it, top 10 about everywhere we go. So we're hoping we keep that trend up this year too.
Well, I figured mine out. I'll put this out on the news. I figured mine out right after Charleston. I mean, right after Myrtle Beach. And I had a buddy of mine who needed some help with a brisket, and I wanted to see. Well, I need a little help with pork because my pork's up and down, up and down. And since I took his, he came over to the house, I gave him brisket class, laid him trim a couple of briskets, and he told me what he did to the pork and everything, and I'm not going to mention any names, but we kind of swapped. He was cooking, his briskets just turned way around. He's like, man, I'm really enjoying cooking brisket, and I said, well, I'm really enjoying winning with your pork. So even though we don't use the same rubs or the same glaze or anything, I guess what I needed most was more of the technique. I knew the flavor was there. I just, you know, it's like
the Jim, that's a great segue to go into Carolina Pitmasters. We don't teach flavors, dry rubs, sauces. We teach technique and how to pull it off and hitting all your marks. I mean, anybody can go out there and find a great dry rub and a great sauce that mixes and do well. But I think it's more about technique and the finished product as far as doneness and texture, and that's what Carolina Pitmasters teaches. And that's where we go over this weekend is that technique and those hitting those marks for every category.
Yeah, because you know, like I said, if you're just a few degrees over in that pork, it can turn mushy in a hurry. So, like I said, I think for the most part, when I thought I was cooking the pork till I needed to, I think it was overdone. So I had to back up a little bit. And then it started hitting, I mean, just consistently because, I mean, as Jim Stetson knows, even in the GBCs, I moved way up in pork. And even in KCDS, I moved way up in pork. I think from Myrtle Beach on, I don't think I placed out of the top 10 in pork the rest of the year. And it was phenomenal just what, I'm not going to say what little, but what I learned from him as far as the technique, how far that went. And it just surprised me because I was, in the beginning, I was never really a fan of just teaching techniques. You know, if I was going to pay for a class, I want to get recipes and all that. But I'm going to be honest with you. After doing that, I'm more of a fan of technique than I am of flavor profiles. Because, you know, if you taste somebody's pork that's winning or somebody's brisket or whatever, you can, with the rubs that are out there on the market, if you pick the right ones, you can come up with the same flavor profile. You can come up totally different.
There's hundreds of great rubs, hundreds of great sauces out there, and it's really not that hard to pair them up where they do well together. I think, and really the SBN has kind of highlighted this, where they weigh your most of your weight and your score goes in the tenderness or the texture category. So if you cook a good piece of pork, a good piece of rib, and it's cooked perfectly to the right texture and tenderness, you're going to do well. I mean, you could probably do some, you know, craft, not a cheaper, decent sauce, and it's basically what you're going to do okay.
Sweet baby Ray's.
That's to say, that ain't nothing wrong with Sweet Baby Ray's.
I think Russ drives a good point home. I think that, I think it's a proven fact that lately, anyway, as far as barbecue competitions are going and competitive cooking, you have to pull your cook off before you can pull your flavors off. And I think that's what, as Russ said, that's what Carolina Pitmasters is all about, teaching you what is what and when is when. And what's really most important in all of this is when is when. You have to know when your meat is done. And that's the whole trick. Everybody asks me a lot of times, what's the trick to, you know, cooking great food? The trick to cooking great food, no matter what you're cooking, is knowing when it's done.
Yeah, and then just know when you get that right texture to it. You know, whether you're wrapping or leaving it on or whatever you do to it, just knowing what you need to do to get that right texture. And like Russ said, I know you know too, Jack, because you're a big part of SBN, is, you know, they're weighing, and Jim, this is something to look at too, when we do these SBN events. is the texture actually weighs just as much, if I'm not mistaken, just as much as the flavor.
More. I think it's more on flavor.
It's heavier on flavor. It's heavier on texture. We did
So you don't really get into a sauce sauce competition.
That's right. It's a cooking contest. It's not a sauce contest.
Exactly. So when you look at these, I mean, I really would like to see some more ESPN events creep into Georgia and get a few more of these Georgia teams involved in it, because you get a good mishmash of you know, you got some seasoned professionals, got some people that are just starting in pro, you got some backyard that are thinking about moving to pro, and then you got backyard teams. And I'll be honest with you, I gave my foreman a little class on Wednesday, and it's more on technique on how to cook it. And, you know, heck, he comes up and beats everybody, you know?
Yeah, and that's what we do. That's what we do at Pitmasters. I'm going to, like Jack said, I'm going to teach him butts and pork and butts and ribs at this event. I'm going to have three different types of player profiles out there. Really doesn't matter. It's all going to come out perfect, hopefully. That's the plan. It's all going to be about technique and texture and hitting all your marks and do what you got to do. But like I said, any good combination of rub and sauce is going to do well in an ESPN contest if the texture is right on the mark.
And if you know your pick, Russ, you got to know your pick. That's what's really most important of anything. You got to know your pick.
Exactly. You got to know what you're cooking on and know how that thing breathes and know what it's going to do and how fast or slow it's going to cook. And that's number one, know what you're cooking on and know how to run it.
Well, the thing I learned, too, after doing it for a couple of years now, I was like Jim Stencil is now. Jim cooks on Primos, I know. And I cooked on green eggs, not this year, but year before, and did very well with them, too. And they're a good, consistent, you know, cooking chamber. And, you know, those have a really low learning curve as far as how to cook on them because, you know, they're almost like a set it, forget it. They're a lot easier than the offset to operate. But you know, then I went to the gravity-fed smokers, and I just fell in love with those. And like you said, with us on a sandwich shop, I do practice cooks every week on briskets and pork. And so I play around a little bit and try to get my textures dead on and what you know where my temperature gauge is on my pork, so to speak. You know, I usually have about a 5-degree range in there where you know I know the texture is going to be dead on for at least those 5 degrees, and then after that it's either too tough on the bottom end or too mushy on the upper end. So after doing all these practice cooks, knowing your pit, and that all goes back to practice.
Well, you know, let me jump in here, too, if y'all don't mind. Is realistically, when you're cooking for a competition, you're completely in a different realm than you would be if you were just cooking at home trying to knock the bottom out of it with your buddies and your friends and your family. So what you're doing when you're doing a competition, basically what they're talking about when they're doing their classes, technique is really is important. But you get one bite, and you've got to make everything out of that one bite. So you've got to get all those flavors, taste, texture, tenderness, everything all into one bite, because you got everybody here knows as a competitor that if you don't get it in that one bite, you ain't going to get a chance to get that second bite. They're not going to go back and get the second bite to give you that higher number or that lower number. You're just going to be at that lower number to start off with. So when you teach somebody something in a class, you have to know who you're teaching it to and why you're teaching it to them. If they're just there to learn about trying to cook better barbecue, that's one thing. But if you're there teaching them just to learn how to cook competition barbecue, you have to give them the tools that they need so that they can go out and make it their own. You can teach people and write stuff down 100 times, but if they don't know what they're doing, why they're doing it, nothing you tell them will make sense until they actually do it themselves. So I try to tell everybody all the time, you can take all the classes you want, and they're very helpful, but you have to take what you get from that class and make it your own in order to be successful from it. And that really is the main point of taking a class, is you have to get something from the class that you can make it your own. That's the only way you'll be successful with it.
Yeah, just because you show up don't mean you're going to be able to cook like that.
No, none of that.
You just got to pay attention. And like I said, if you got something that you like, and when you go to these classes, they're going to cook it competition style. So the thing you take away from these classes, you pay attention to the texture, you pay attention to the taste of it, and that way you can put it all together so you can kind of almost try to duplicate that when you go to a contest. Now, granted, you may not use, like I said, I didn't use the same rubs or the same glaze or whatever this other guy did. But I knew my flavor profile was there. It's just, you know, I didn't know how to do the whole package. And now when you put the tenderness and the texture and the flavor together, I mean, that's the whole thing. And people really have to pay, like Jim said, you really got to pay attention to that. And take really, really good, you know, precise notes.
All aspects are very important, including the appearance. If you got to have a good look at box too. It's all a package deal. And if you're off on one aspect of that, those four scoring categories, you're done. I mean, if you fill a crappy box and you got great centers and texture, you're not going to be there. But if you got to have all, you got to be on your game on all four aspects of those scoring categories to be in the top 10 or top 5 of any contest.
Yeah, and that's what's really cool about Carolina Pitmasters is on Saturday, we're going to have an open judging. We're going to bring judges in, and they're multi-certified judges, and we're going to have an open judging. So you'll be able to, there'll be an interaction between the students and the judges. They'll be able to ask the questions. One of the most common questions that I get out of when I'm out doing it, what are the judges looking for? What do they want? What are they looking for? At Carolina Pitmasters, you're going to be able to ask the judges right there. We're going to present food, build boxes, put it in the box, give it to the judges, and you're going to be able to stand there, and there's going to be a great interaction between the judges and the students. You can actually, you know, find out what exactly it is people are looking for. Is it a flavor thing? Is it a texture thing? Is it an appearance thing? You're going to be able to see all of that going on Saturday at Carolina Pitmasters. It's a great opportunity.
Well, that's another thing, like you said, you brought up really quick. You know, I took a school and, you know, I wrote down all the everything I thought I needed. But, you know, as you know, you can tell 10 people the exact same. You can give them the recipe, technique, everything. And when they turn the box in back to you, you have 10 different products. You know? So all be very similar, but they all have their own little differences and everything, too. It depends on the pitch you cook on. Like everybody here said, you know, you've got to know your pit. You know, you can't just go out there, go from the class, throw your meat on at a competition, expect to win it. It's not going to happen. You know, you've got to do a little practicing. You got to take what you learned from the class and apply it to, you know, the actual cooking method and the cooking technique and the flavor profile and all that. And then bring it all in a total package with the appearance. And, you know, I don't know.
You have to make it your own. You have to make it your own. You have to take what you learn from those classes and make it your own. These guys teaching these classes, and I don't know them personally, but I read, you know, I read their stuff on Facebook and whatnot. These guys have cooked in a ton of events. I mean, they've cooked barbecue for a long time. I mean, and I think some of these people that come to these classes have not cooked barbecue as long. And although they may have a $12,000 grill or a, you know, a pellet cooker or whatever where you can just turn it on, set and forget it, whether it be ceramic, gravity fed, or anything, these guys, and you're the same way, Jim, you show us where the fire is, we can figure out how to make it work. I mean, this is, it all comes down to how much experience you have. And those guys can learn a lot from those classes. And I tell everybody, the first thing to do, go take a class. Go find somebody that's teaching a class, go take the class. But that's just something to get you going. And then you're going to have to go out and figure the rest of it out on your own, because you and I both know that inevitably something is going to happen at a contest that's going to change your cook. Something will happen. You know, it doesn't always happen, but something will happen, and you will need to know what to do. And if all you know is what they showed you at the class and you haven't gone out and ventured out and tried to learn your cooker or learn your meats or pick out a different kind of meat or a rub or change one thing or the other, you can't go to the contest and learn how to do it. You should have it figured out by the time you get to the contest, and the only thing you can get that with is experience.
Just
time.
You're right, Jim. You know, and I've heard all the years people wanting, I guess, notes and comments. And if you get a bad score or something, you probably know why you got that bad score. If I bomb a rib category, the chance I know why I bombed that rib category. It was undercooked, overcooked, the box was quite crappy. If you with experience, you know what happened with that category, with that meat, and why it did well or why it did poorly. So, and that's just, like Jim said, it comes with experience.
Yeah, I mean, classes are invaluable. That's all that stuff is invaluable. I mean, whatever you pay to take a class or to learn somebody else's knowledge that have cooked as many events as any one of us four have, it's worth whatever you think it is. But at the end of the day, I would have paid big money to learn some of the mistakes I made the first 3 or 4 years I competed, you know, back in the late 90s and then into the early 2000s. I mean, you just can't – there was no classes available. So a lot of those things, you just went to a contest and you had to look at your score sheet and try to figure out what you did or what you didn't do. And it kind of came as a hit and miss kind of thing until you kind of figured it out, or or somebody helped you. And there were always people around that would say, "Hey, man, you should try this or you should do that." But there were never classes, not like they are now. Everybody's got classes. There's classes all over the place, you know, from top five guys all the way down to whoever. Even, you know, I do a small class for people that cook with primos and stuff like that. So there's classes everywhere, but that knowledge is worth something. And if it saves them 20 contests to figure it out by paying $200 to $500 to take the class, it's well worth it. Because think about how much it costs to get that experience in 10 contests.
Yeah.
You know,
even,
versus...
You know, 18 years ago, you'd go on most barbecue message boards and get a lot of great tips. I know I did. Before I took my first KSVS event in 2004, I was on Basso's board every day reading threads about ribs of all categories. I picked up a lot just reading threads and picking up tips. But unfortunately, people aren't talking about as much barbecue on those boards today as they were 5 years ago even. So
it's all politics now.
It's all politics. It's unfortunate. I hate going to the boards now to hear all the BS. But today, if you really want to compete, you got to take a class or just take your hits and learn as you go, like I did. Your boards aren't there anymore.
A lot of guys in the circuit, I mean, we're all competitive guys. We probably share information that we don't realize we share just in joshing each other and talking to each other and doing whatever. But for the most part, nobody's really shigging on each other. We kind of all have – everybody has their own little techniques, and they're all pretty much – we all start at one place, but we all end up in the same place, you know. We all end up in the box with our portions, and we're turning them into the eaters. So, and we call them the eaters affectionately because that's what they do. They eat, we feed. So they're their own group, and they have their own little deal. And you know your crowd and your judges by where you compete. You know kind of what they're looking for, but – like you said, these guys say, well, what are the judges looking for? Well, you know, when you go cook 100 contests, you come back and tell me what your secret is, because that's really all you can do. You can kind of figure out where you need to be, and you'll know what works and what doesn't work after you cook a few events. Obviously, you can get instant feedback if you go take a class and then you get a call. But you and I both know that when you start looking at those score sheets, you really need to analyze them after you've cooked a few events. It can't just happen after one. And there's a lot of teams out there that will cook an event, not like what they see, and start to change things. And not take into account that they've got different folks judging in different tents and they're in different tables. So you need to kind of take a variance of cooking 3 or 4 events before you start to really make massive changes. It's always easy to tweak a little bit, but I think the class can show them basic techniques on how to do it, when to do it, where to do it, and then they need to build on that. And I think that's where a lot of these guys they miss their mark when they come out and they start cooking, is they just think that class is going to give them everything they need, and it only takes them so far. You know how that works. If there's a problem, they don't know where to go with it, and I think that they've got to make it all their own, basically.
One thing I like about SBN, too, though, Jim, and I'll let you cook the one in Myrtle Beach not last year. That was a fiasco, but...
We actually did pretty well in that contest.
If you noticed, every judge gave you a card, a comment card on your entry. And I mean, you may, out of 12 judges, you might get 10. But I really like seeing that, because then you can kind of tell, you know, if you get like 3 or 4 judges say it might have been a little salty or you didn't do that well or whatever. That's really good feedback. You know, if you're trying to cook the best barbecue you can for these judges, and you get consistent little notes in there, like maybe it was too sweet or had too much pepper or too salty or whatever.
If you get a consistent note, that's
exactly.
If you get something that's consistent and it actually makes sense. Sometimes you'll get something that makes no sense whatsoever. But
case in point, up in Shepherd this past year, I let Jan glaze the ribs. And Scott was there. Scott's on the other line. He was up there when I showed him our comment card. He was cooking right behind me, from Q and Stew and Bruin. You're on now, Scott. But anyway, we got a comment card back on our ribs saying they were gooey. And we don't know what to make of that. I've never heard of that. And we're trying to think of, you know, we finished like, I don't know, about 12th, 13th of ribs, but they were gooey. And, you know, I just don't know what they were.
Jim, I got a comment card one time. We cook on a Tucker offset, it's all charcoal wood. I got a comment card back to our ribs. It's like propane. So explain that to me, you know.
Yeah, I hear judges all the time talk about it tasted like lighter fluid. And, you know, how many of us actually use lighter fluid?
I don't know. Anybody leaves you all lighter fluid?
I mean, not many. So,
look out.
But
hey,
I know it. I know it.
Well, I want to know how many people have actually cooked. How do they know what lighter fluid tastes like, Jim? It's I've never took a drink of it, and I don't know what
I've never took
like,
a drink of it either.
I think the judges use it at home and they grill. That's how they taste it.
It's just their familiar taste. Maybe they brush their teeth with that stuff. I don't know. You know how them damn eaters are.
Hey, congratulations this weekend on your reserve. Good job down there. It was a tough field.
I appreciate it, man. We got, you know, a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and again.
That's a big-ass squirrel.
So, but, yeah, I mean, it's all relevant to what you've practiced doing and what your experience is. I mean, I think that the comment cards are great, but sometimes they're a little bit distracting when their message is not clear. And, like, I'm going to Mobile this weekend to train as a rep for KCBS, and the reason being is I want to know all aspects of everything we do based on – I would like to have some input on when these judges write these notes on there. I mean, it's a helpful thing for us to all be acclimated to everybody. You know, the judges need to spend a little more time in the cook sites after the contest talking to the cook teams. And I think there's always been this bridge or this gap where the cook teams and the judges just don't converse. You know, some of them do, but a lot of them, they have no idea, you know. So that's why we're doing those things where we implement coming back to the cook team site and get samples instead of packing them out of the judges' table. You know what I mean? I mean, there just needs to be this little dialogue between the judges and the cooks so that there can be a little more, you know, knowledge on our end. I mean, we want to give them good products, but if you write us a note, like you said, it's the rib was gooey. What the hell does that mean?
Yeah, was it overdone and too much sauce?
Yeah,
or was
gooey. Was it, you know, too thick with sauce, too sweet with sauce, or was the sauce too cold, or what happened? You know, so vague notes and hints on the scorecards don't help.
I'm a big fan of having judges within their first 10 contests to cook with a team. Because you got so many people that are just in disarray. You talk to any judge and...
I think it should be within 5 contests, to be honest with you. I don't think they should ever be allowed to judge a contest until they work in the judge's area and they cook with a team before they ever get a pencil in their hands.
Yeah, because most of the judges...
That's what I think.
Well, they don't know what they're looking for until about the 5th or 6th contest. Well, how many teams have you screwed up since then, you know? So, and then a lot of judges don't take into consideration. This shouldn't be part of the judging, but, you know, the judges that have cooked with me said, well, it'd be hard-pressed to get a lower score out of it just because of what y'all go through. And even just for your you know, trial and error and the work you put into it and stuff is worth at least this, you know.
Well, the good news is, as an organizer, we always try to put one new or a judge that has 3 or less contests at one table so that those judges can maintain their – start to get their experience, but they're not putting 2 or 3 of them at a table. So you know that at least one of those scores is going to get kicked. And you know typically the new judge scores higher than would be a medium or a higher range judge would in general. And that's pretty easy to track, too. I mean, I see it all the time. But when we set up our contest, there's always a brand new judge at every table. Because if you don't put them at those tables, they're never going to get the experience. Because I don't know if y'all have ever tried to go judge a contest, but it's hard to get on a list to go judge, especially here in the South.
SBN does is they try to form together novice tables for new judges. I think Jackie talked better about this on the SBN's part of view, but it gives them a chance to judge barbecue, and some of the teams actually make an extra box for the novice table, just to give them the experience to judge a box of barbecue, and they will probably judge 3 or 4 or 5 contests before they get to a real table and those scores actually count. So I think Jack can talk more better about that, but it's a good thing SBN has done and continues to include in the training program.
Yeah, SBN trains judges very well. They give them a lot of information. They give them a lot of technique information. They give them a lot of opportunity. There's always a great exchange of information between the cookers and the judges. They just go through a whole big training process of trying to make better judges, so that the cooks, and it's all cook oriented, so the cooks can have a fair and level playing field to cook under. That's really what it's all about. I think as a cook, that's the only thing you could have ever asked for from a judge or from a group of judges or a sanctioning organization, is to make sure that everybody's on the same page, everybody's cooking the same thing, the judges are all looking for the same thing, and everything's a standard, so the cooks know what standard they need to cook to. It's really what it's all about.
Yeah, that's all. I mean, that's been my deal, too. I mean, I think that the judges need more knowledge before they actually get a pencil in their hand on the KCBS side, but you and I both know that KCBS is a big entity, and they have several judging classes all around this country every single month. In Atlanta, just in the last 2 months, there's been 3. And I know that all of them had 50-plus. I know the one we had at Brasstown, which we will not have another one next year at our banquet, had at least 90 in our class. So I know that over the last 3 years, we've put 240-plus judges in the judges pool to judge contests that, you know, I know there's more contests, but you and I both know if you only have 40 or 50 teams, you only need 40 or 50 judges. Well, if we put, you know, damn near 300 in the pool in the last 3 years, that doesn't leave a whole lot of room for new judges to get in to get contests.
Jim, do you know how many judges, y'all trained 300 judges last year, how many of those judges actually pursue and judge barbecue on a regular basis? Do some just get trained and not judge?
One of them tries to pursue barbecue to judge these contests. The problem is there are so many established judges, and contest organizers are so hesitant to add more new judges that they don't get a chance, and it frustrates them, and eventually they just drop off. But I can tell you right now, every contest I have something to do with, if there's 30 judges, at least one at every table will be a brand new judge or within one contest or somewhere less than 3. And we do that on purpose because we know that if you don't work them in, you can't do anything with them. So
yeah. Well,
I'm sure all of them pursue it, but they get frustrated and they stop pursuing it.
That's unfortunate, but the 30-1 really is not a bad ratio. I don't mind taking my chances of 29 good judges at a contest when there's 5 tables.
Well, you get one at every table, so there would be 5. 1 in 6 is going to be brand new. I mean, you want to put one brand new judge at every table. You all on KCBS, one of those scores gets kicked, but I'm telling you, that brand new judge, his score is typically higher than a standard normal judge that has 15 or more contests. So that's what the judge you're worried about. You're worried about training them. You're worried about getting them that experience from 5 to 15 contests as opposed to 1 to 5. If you could turn them loose in the cook site to get their deal and to work in the judge's area at the turn-in table or the grazing table before you ever gave them a pencil, their insight would be completely different than it is if you just let them take the class and then give them a pencil and then let them judge. It's backwards,
in my opinion.
Good
thing about SCBA, the Talking Barbecue Association, does require, in order to move up to senior judge and eventually master judge, you got to cook so many events with a special cook team. So it does give that organization doing a good job of getting those judges experience in a cooking situation it's so far, see what those cookers go through on weekend. I guess it'd be, that's one good thing that that group is doing. It'd be good if some of the other groups would be caught on to that and implemented something like that to their judges.
All right, let me get on down the road here. I got a bunch of stuff going on. I'm Jack Waybor. Friend me on Facebook. Make sure you watch Great TV, greattv.com. Check out SBN and SBBQN.com. And certainly get a hold of Carolina Pitmasters. We'd love to see you over there as well. Check it out. Be good. If you're, you know, if you're checking me out on Facebook, certainly we'd love to have you as a friend. And while I'm out doing the barbecue thing all across the nation, make sure you get on out and shake hands. We'd love to say thanks to everybody. I got to get on down the road, guys. I'd love to kick this around. It's a great subject.
Well, thanks, Jack. Thanks for coming on, buddy. I know you had a tight schedule, and we'll look for you at the next contest we go to.
Appreciate it, man. We'll see you all down the road.
Yeah. All right, thanks, Jack.
Hey, thanks, Jim. I got to get out of here, too, man. I appreciate you having me on.
Okay, Jim. Glad you could be on here, and, hey, congrats again on that call.
Hey,
calls,
thanks.
Man.
I'll see you guys soon.
See you,
Jim. Right,
Jim.
All right, buddy. So, Scott, what you got going on this weekend?
I've got a cooking class going on up in the Kennesaw Ackworth area where I'm from in Georgia, and we're through a full KCBS cook school. We're going to cover all four categories, and things are looking up. Looks real good. I got a lot of good participation. Got a lot of seasoned teams attending the class, so I'm excited, and I know some of them are. I've had some emails and phone calls from them, but everything's looking good so far.
Are you teaching hot and fast or low and slow or both?
Both. We're going to do our gravity feeds. We're going to do the low and as low and slow as I can tolerate. And then, of course, we're going to do the hot and fast on 500. We're going to do the QSP style. So, and when they walk away, there's going to be guys there that's going to walk away that's already bought gravity feeds. And there's going to be guys there that's walking away that's already bought water smokers. So I think it's going to be the best for both worlds.
Do you want me to cut it and hold your hand on low and slow, or is Tim going to do that?
Tim's going to hold my hand on that because it's hard for me to stay low.
Hey,
I'm
hey,
like
Russ,
QSP like a falcon. We rise up.
Yeah, that's it. Y'all cook low and slow, don't you, Russ?
We do a little both. I mean, Curology just kind of go middle of the road the last couple of years, but for the most part, Pitmasters is a mostly low and slow teaching school. It really depends on me. I'm doing the ribs and the butts. I'll cook our ribs and butts like we do any other competition weekend. And Seth is doing chicken. He'll do his chicken. And Jack is doing brisket. He'll do his brisket. And Mike Fields is doing his whole hog. So you'll get a little bit of everybody's world there.
Well, Scott likes to blow into a contest about 4 o'clock in the morning, smoke it up, and put his meat on at 5, and he's done at 8.
Well, there's better hours than that kind of barbecue, I guess. Get to sleep that way, I guess.
End of the day, we got the same product, boys.
That's it.
Yeah.
Scott knows I give him crap all the time. He just comes in, and everybody else has got their meat on. Him and Mike will come in, and they get those big QSB smokers going. They got twin stacks on. Looks like a damn Peterbilt cranking up. And I tell you what, they put out a hell of a lot of smoke. That's all I can say. It must be all that lighter fluid you use.
Well, it's that, the combination of all that steam and water. People think that's smoke. It's probably about 50% smoke and 50% steam, to be honest.
You need to put your steam whistle on there when you do that. You know that?
Well, we're helping the drought situation in all the areas we go to because we're releasing moisture into the air and creating clouds. It does rain usually a day or two after I leave a site.
It creates its own cloud, doesn't it?
Exactly.
Now, Scott's he builds my good gravity fed smokers and stuff, and I don't know if you heard earlier about Mike Richard talking about it. He saw Barry Johnson's down there, and you've got him very intrigued on that. And get somebody like Mike, you know, he's got a Jambo to get somebody like him. He's got a Lang at the house. To get somebody like him intrigued on it, it's very impressive because, you know, those older guys, they don't vary too much in what they've done over the last 6-8 years. But Mike said he was pretty impressed with the workmanship on the smokers and loved that chicken box. And he said, you know, he said, that's a great smoker in its own right. And I told him, you know, if you do a catering, man, that is the thing to do. That's why both of these that I've got sold coming up this week, they're going to be competing and the cater. And they like the idea of just putting the meat in there at night, going to bed, getting up in the morning, wrapping it, lunchtime, pull in there, everything's done, ready to go. And,
what smoke are we talking about, Jim? What brand is that?
My new TNT, I call it my stretch limo.
Okay.
You know, the
Southern, Jim, it's a Southern Q. You have a TNT model on the Q.
Right.
The long model we have yet to name. I may even come up with a contest to name it, but it's Southern Q smokers.
Yeah, I've got a TNT model. Like I said, he's got this one's a just like a stretch. The regular TNT will hold two full pans. This one actually holds three full pans. Door kind of on the side, so you can get all three pans real easily. And it's got a tuning plate in it, which keeps the heat distribution pretty well even all through the chamber. It's got three racks in it, and there's plenty of room in between each rack. And the paint jobs on them are awesome. You can get just about any color you want. And I tell you what, my first cook was Augusta, and we took Grand up there. So, you know, that just says it right there. It's a really good cooker. So I'll have that in Columbia, and I'll have it in down there in Somerville, too.
So, you said you're coming to the Lodge, Jim, right?
Yeah.
I told Matt about that. He said you need to keep yourself in Georgia that weekend, but come on anyway.
Coming from Matt, that's probably you probably had about five bleeps in there that you didn't say.
Yeah,
so,
I edited it before I repeated it.
That yeah. Second cook of the year, guys, was also one with a Southern Q TNT model at the Daphne Sam's event by the Pit Crew. They're
yep.
on one of our Southern Q TNT models.
Yep, Tina. So we're pumping out some grands. I mean, the SBN team of the year was on a Southern Q last year. So, you know, I think my first contest, wasn't it, Scott, in Daphne? I'll take that back. My first contest I cooked on my Southern Q TNT was Augusta last year. I got reserved. Went right around to an FBA, my first FBA ever in Dublin, Georgia, and and cooked strictly on that TNT model, and we got a grand. I think it was probably the first grand that was at that point was cooked on the TNT. So I'm gonna tell you what, you know, I had my orange one last year, a new one Scott built me, and I sold it the weekend before I came down to Charleston. So if you know, I had the one I pulled out of retirement, my black one that I had at the beginning of the year, that's what I used down here in Charleston. So, I mean, that just shows how consistently these things cook. And, you know, if you know one of them, you know all of them. And the same way with this water pan cookers. You know, you get one, you know how they operate, and it's just like what you've got. Once you know how it operates, I mean, you can rock and roll, you know. So,
out of the contest we've had this year, I'm very proud of all the guys cooking on them. Southern Q already has three grands, and here we are the first week of March. And out of that Daphne Sam's, there was two Southern Qs that qualified in the top six, just that alone. But they're growing, and we want to take it to the next level, and it'll eventually get there for us. But we're working hard at it, and we do make changes. We're not afraid to make changes, so... Things are coming together. It just takes time with it.
I will admit that, you know, with the amount of smokers that you have out there that other teams are competing on, rough in my opinion, even some of the things I brought to their attention, they've considered doing just cooking on it for ease and whatever else it was. You know, they're big enough to pump these smokers out, but they're not too big to listen to what you had to say or if they need to customize something. You know, to make it fit better for what you've got, your application of it. And, you know, I mean, they'll listen to you, and they will make the changes. And so, you know, I look forward to having a long relationship with Scott and Tim up there at Southern Q Smokers and push these smokers wherever I can and help them out because they help me out. And, they're, like I said, they're really good smokers. You know, Brian Teague's getting one, and Michael Harmon from Palmetto Smokehouse, he's fixing to pick up another one.
Well, Scott, so, I feel like he's not in the market for a speaker right now. If you need us to demo one for you on the circuit, hang your banner, we'll be happy to do that for you.
Who are you with again?
Qology.
Qology, okay.
Yeah, but,
I've heard your name.
I said I would say they're my nemesis, but I think I'm their nemesis. And we'd be putting out the first banjo of the queue they cooked right behind us, and we had a ball. And
yeah, that was a good contest.
Yeah, ever since we did around it, Jan was giving them hell, of course, as always. But mainly Matt, because Matt deserves it.
Yeah, Matt's literally the redheaded stepchild, but he's got as much knowledge out there as anybody on the field. So he's a great addition, a great part of our team. He's a man.
Yeah, they're a really good team. I mean, like I said, they're another South Carolina team that's done awesome in Pork. And, you know, I can't say enough. You know, I think, you know, South Carolina teams struggle with brisket the most, but y'all, you know, y'all did what y'all had to do this past year, got a class, and got to ask me a whole lot of questions and everything. And
We got brisket figured out
Finally got y'all on the right track.
I ain't running with brisket no more. I think we got it figured out, so hopefully we'll have a great 2013 this year. I'm looking forward to it.
If you've got brisket figured out, I want to talk to you then, because I've never had a category figured out, but I want to talk to you if you got brisket figured out.
I got three words for you. Snake River Farms.
Don't let him fool you. He's one of the top teams in brisket in the country in KCBS. He goes out there and he'll kick your butt in brisket any God-given day.
I'm sure he will.
And he's a dealer for Snake River Farms, so Don't even go there, Scott. Now, chicken, chicken, I think you can say that, but not brisket. Brisket's your strongest category.
It is my strong point, but I know there's always help out there.
Yeah. But don't fall in that trap for us. I mean, I know Scott, and if there's one thing out of the four or five or six categories, whatever's out there, that I put him up against anybody, it would be brisket. I mean, that's his number one thing. I think you beat me by .0004 in the Georgia Barbecue Championship Series, didn't you?
I don't know, Jim. We've done well this year in it, and I had two 180s in 2012, which carried us our total up to I think five or something. We've got more 180s than anybody, but I don't know where I was. I've never won Georgia. Pig Whispers has brisket figured out very well. They've won it 2 years in a row in Georgia.
Oh yeah, they're tough, they always kick my. Well, I didn't make it to the National Barbecue Cup, but last year they passed me, and this year they passed me too in brisket. Because I was going into that last contest in third place in brisket, and both you and him passed me in brisket on that last contest. So, I was coming on strong towards the end, but hopefully, I've got a few things, a lot of practice cooks this past winter, and hopefully I got a few things figured out a little bit better to where I can start off a little bit better and not get a slow start and kind of keep it going throughout the year and competing against you and Russ and that whole crowd. I mean, I can't catch a break between Georgia and South Carolina. So it keeps you on your toes. And, like I said, Russ, I've told everybody before, I said, if you want to learn how to cook pork, take class from the South Carolina team. Because, me coming over there and cooking the SBN and some SCBAs, it's really up my game in pork. And, you got to be well-rounded. So
yeah, you got to hit your marks on every category to do well. I mean, if you can hit three categories and bomb one, and you're out of the game. We proved that in Nashville last year, unfortunately. But you got to be on your marks in all four categories every weekend to be in the game.
Yep. Well, Scott, where's your next cook at, Scott?
I'll be in Tupelo, Mississippi next weekend. This weekend I've got my class. I'll be in Tupelo. There's 100 teams there. I helped the organizer out with some situations she had the other week. I was on a waiting list. I was actually the first one on the waiting list. in case anybody's listening that was on it. I was the first one on it, and she got me in there last week, and I'll be in Tupelo for sure after that. I don't know if I'm going to do one of those Louisiana guys. I've been invited with a couple other teams, but don't know that I'll do those. I need to catch up on some cooker work, and then I'll start that Georgia swing 1st of April, and we'll be in Georgia, it seems like, for just a couple of months. I mean, we've got Columbus, we got Somerville, we got Rome, all of these leading into May, and I'm also sponsoring Kids Cues this year for some of the Cues. I know I'm doing Rome and New Harley already. I'm going to do a Southern Q Kids Q deal to try to get our younger people involved with it, and my son, of course, loves to cook those, and we're gonna really promote the Kids Cues this year and try to bring out this next generation.
I think that's great. I think any sport you need to really take the kids along, because that's the next step in the sports is them taking on the legacy. And your son's done very well in Kids Q and had a good teacher. And I think he's even taught you one or two things from what I found out this past year. So, you know, you're never too old to learn. And, you know, like Scott said, you know, whatever you can pick up that makes life easier on you, that's what you got to do. Now, how can people get in touch with you on your class this weekend? I know it's kind of short notice, but, you know, they still got time to get in. And
They still have time to get in. Anybody can call me. My number is readily available at 770-547-0110. And you can also go to the SouthernQSmokers.com website. There's two phone numbers on there, and you'll get me or Tim, either one, and you can get a hold of me through that. Facebook.
And that's a really, really good class, because like I said, they've been a low and slow and hot and fast. You're talking to two world-class pit masters that are going to be teaching you everything. And, you know, if you don't like one, you look at the other, you can kind of go in between and pick your own spot. And I know, like Russ said, I think they're kind of in between. They're not really all low and slow, and they're not all hot and fast. So, you know, several different varieties of cooking classes you can take, especially this weekend. It looks like a hodgepodge. And, Scott, appreciate you coming on, man. Appreciate them smirkers. And I'll be looking forward to seeing you later on this week to get Brian his smirkers. So he's going to be an excited puppy.
I will see you this week. Thanks for having me. And anybody interested in that class, they can get a hold of us. And I appreciate everything you do for us, too, Jim.
All right. Appreciate it, buddy. Have a good evening.
All right. Thanks.
Okay, well, so now the Carolina Pitmasters, I know y'all said on earlier in the show, and let's put some numbers up there or some websites so they can get in touch with y'all to try to finish filling up the class.
Jim, we got 12 or 15 spots filled. We got a couple more spots left, so if anybody wants to get in, go to CarolinaPitmasters.com, and there's the forums on there. You can give me a call. My number is 843-743-5082, or find me on Facebook, Russ Cornett. I'll be happy to share information with you on the class and getting you down here in Somerville. The Pitmaster page, there's a Facebook page for Carolina Pitmasters. You can get on that and ask questions. We'll answer them. But there's a few spots available if you want to get in now. I mean, in the next couple of days, so we can get you registered and get your package ready for this weekend. But we got a nice class. Great thing about this class, Jim, the unique thing about this class, one of the unique things about this class, I got involved in this class in 2008 with Jack, and every year we've had someone from Canada, which is amazing to me that someone would drive from Canada down to Somerville and take a barbecue class. But then we have two from Canada this year, which is breathtaking, but it's amazing. But I don't know what it is, but we'll take them. You would teach barbecue internationally if that's what it takes.
Well, you know, like I've told everybody before, you know, there's been a lot of grand champions that come out of that class, and there's a lot of grand champions teaching that class. So, you know, you've got five categories. You got whole hog, which is a lot of people's nemesis. I've never cooked a whole hog, but you're also doing all four of the other categories, and that covers you in just about every sanctioning body you can think of in Georgia. I mean, in actually the nation, with the exception of GBA. If you figure out the pork loin in GBA, then I'll take your class.
I've never cooked a GBA contest. That's one thing I would like to do soon one day. But we teach case of BS. We teach how to build build a parsley box or a garnish box. We also teach SBN, which is basically ungarnished. But the parlay is basically the same. And I'll tell you, my pork box, my rib box, is basically the same box for KSBS or SBN. I may put a few more ribs in the SBN box so I don't have the garnish to deal with. I may put a little more pork in the SBN box so I don't have the garnish to deal with. But the product of the pit is a product of the pit. It's the same thing.
Well,
so we teach both sides.
Well, it's also like an FBA class because, like I said, there's no garnish. You got four meats. There's no garnish. So, I mean, it can be considered an FBA class, too. I mean, like I said, this whole class will get you, you know,
yeah.
MBN, SBN, KCBS, FBA, you know, all these different sanctioning bodies that this class. It's not just South Carolina barbecue. It's the whole nine yards. So that's what
it
makes
is.
It very unique. And you've got several different pit masters. You don't have one guy trying to do four different categories. You got one grand pit master concentrating on one category or two categories, and you know, so you get the best of both worlds. And
one good thing about this class too, if you take the class one time, you can come back every year and kind of audit the class, I guess you could say. So we got pit masters that have taken it, went out of the competition circuit and cooked and done very well. They come back every year. You know as well as I do, Jim. You and I and everybody cooking learn things every year. We change our technique as we learn things and tweak it and improve it. So you pick up something every year you come back. I mean, my ribs today aren't the same as my ribs were 5 years ago. I've made changes. I've tweaked things and I've hopefully improved it, and that goes with everybody. I mean, so you come back for no charge. We think it'd help out a little bit and maybe clean the bathroom or pick up the trash, but You get that increased knowledge, and you get that refresher, also, which helps every year. And that's one of the tweaks. That's one of the things for our alumni to look to. It's better for them to come back every year and take part. Plus, it's a good time. We have a great time out there every night and tell barbecue anecdotes and stories and this and that. Stories about Matt, and it's a good time.
Matt will tell a story about Matt, so that's a good thing, too. Well, the good thing, too, like you mentioned that, you know, you change your stuff from time to time, but you also mentioned in that you tweak it. So, you know, for all you pit masters, he's not talking about changing the whole recipe or changing the whole technique. It's just that he may be adding a lighter rub or a lighter glaze or doing something to the glaze to make it a little more appealing towards this side, sweet, spicy, whatever. And you know, the taste of the judges change, so you have to be willing to come outside your window just a little bit and tweak it to where they're gonna, you know, because judges' flavors change. Everybody knows that.
Yeah, and you got to keep up with that. Now, that's one of the challenges about barbecue is keeping up what the judges want to eat every Saturday, and you got to, and that's a great challenge to find out what they want and what they're looking for, and giving it to them.
Right. So, well, Russ, we'll see you in about 3 weeks, I guess, over in Columbia.
Be up Saturday. Matt and Brian are going to do the Friday night thing. I can't come Friday night, but I'm going to drive up Saturday morning with my two boys, and we're going to hopefully help them build a box and hopefully come out of the box strong in 2013 at that contest.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to seeing you up there, and be safe, and good luck with your class this weekend. I hope everything goes well.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Well, I appreciate you being on. And
all right.
Yeah. So that was Russ with Qology out of Somerville, South Carolina, one of the top teams to deal with every weekend and week out in Carolina. All three of them are really good pit masters, Brian Robertson, Matt, and Russ. They're always a team to beat, and we enjoyed running the race with them this year. And you know, it was pretty tight the whole year, so it was a good show. But this is Killer Bees. We're going to be signing off here. Like I said, again, I want to thank Royal Oak, Phoenix Printing, of course, Southern Q Smokers, with Scott and Tim. I also want to thank David Buska from Butcher Barbecue for putting up with us. And great products from Butcher Barbecue. Also, Jeff Campbell from Wicked Q. Quality stuff that he's got also. And Fireside Outdoor Kitchens and Grills. We're glad all y'all on board with us and helped us out. And we look forward to seeing everybody next Monday night. And get out there, take a class. I'm telling you, I did, and it really cut the learning curve. It may cost you two events, but I'm going to tell you what. I reaped my first reward the second event I went out and cooked it. So take a class from one of these guys. You won't be sorry. Till next Monday night, keep on smoking, buddy.